Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
Hi, my name is Daniela Terminal, and I am the co-founder and CEO at Elephant in a Box.
Daniela, thanks so much for making time to join us on the Ivy Podcast on this Monday afternoon. Before we dive into your current company and all the great stuff you guys are building, which I'm very excited about learning a little bit more, give us a thumbnail version of your career prior to that.
Sure, Dan. Thanks. Thanks for having me, first of all. And it's for me, it's definitely not been like an A to B road. You know, it's been like all over the place. You know, one thing I've known, and it's that I've always wanted to work with entrepreneurs, right? I was never into the corporate world. So since my early years, even my internships, I started working with entrepreneurs directly or indirectly. And most of my career was working with Endeavor, that is a global organization that creates entrepreneurial ecosystems with high impact entrepreneurs around the world. And I had the opportunity to really learn about entrepreneurship, from the bench in that role, right? Like really trying to understand the needs and how to help them through the Endeavor network, that is a very vast network. And it was in 2019 that I decided to jump in entrepreneurship per se, joining my now co-founders at Elephant in a Box. But definitely, you know, I went from like sales, HR, finance, and I balanced a little bit over all the place until I realized that it was about really entrepreneurship, and that was the core part of it.
Wow, that's super exciting and quite a journey. I appreciate you sharing a little bit more about yourself. So fast forward, you're currently you're building your own company, your co-founder. Tell us a little bit more about that. How did the idea was born, and just, you know, a little bit more about the mission of the company.
Sure, absolutely. No, I think that one of the things that I love the most about Elephant in a Box is that all the founders live the problem that we're trying to solve, right? And it's very simple. It's just trying to make the process of buying furniture easier, not only when you get it for the first time, but also when you're going to be moving out, right? Because we know that spaces are getting smaller, you know, and your logistics are getting more complex, right? So we were like, wouldn't it be awesome to have, you know, a sofa that would be like an accordion almost, right? That you can get in any space and it's strong and it's comfy and it's durable, et cetera, and has all the attributes of the regular furniture, right? And that's how my co-founders, who had been working with Honeycomb, that is this material that allows it to be expandable, unfolded and refolded, you know, unlimited times, really connected the dots, right? They were relocated to Boston. They lived the problem by themselves and they came up with the idea. We spent 2 years developing the product, you know, working with different firms in Europe, in the US, until we were ready to go out to market last year in 2020, in May 2020. So it was really interesting, you know, because on my end, I had experience on the furniture industry from the office furniture, a point of view. And I knew that it was an industry that hasn't really changed, right? All the materials are pretty much the same, you know, wood, metal, etc. There's been marginal improvements, but nothing that really, really changes. And when we bring the Honeycomb, it's almost like what, you know, Tempur-Pedic did with foam. Right, when they introduced the foam into the mattress. So it was really exciting to solve a problem that I was living after, you know, I'm living in New York for like 11 years now. I was born and raised in Mexico City, and I moved like maybe like 14 times, and out of those 14 times, 11 by myself, you know, so I lived the problem and I knew the industry, and I really thought that this could be like a game changer.
Well, that's quite a journey and definitely seems very interesting in terms of very unique value proposition, which you don't really see that often, especially in such a niche segment as, you know, as furniture. So that's very
that's
exciting.
A hope.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I love the name, the elephant in a box. It's very catchy. It's relevant as far as what you're actually building. So when it comes to you know, the trends in your industry or in your space that you're very excited about, I'm sure that you researched that a lot, where the industry is going and what are the different insights and trends that are happening. What are you mostly excited about these days?
Yeah, you know, I think that, I mean, outside of the industry, I mean, this week is all about space, right? So I'm getting like personally excited about all these like space activity, right? And how it's really, really changing, and how, what are the implications that it can have in all of us, not only from the travel side of it and the tourist side of it, but also, you know, like what are the implications in terms of like climate, right? Like the emissions and so on. And what are the implications in terms of like all the services that are actually in the space, like Wi-Fi and things like that, right? Like live there, and how is that going to change? So I'm personally really interested in that. And I know that that will have some repercussions into the way we live our everyday life. And I think that elephant in a box, you know, is in the everyday life of our customers, right? We're trying to make that life simple, and then we're trying to be, you know, we are that sofa that you get and you relax, or you work, or you whatever you need to do, you can do it in there. So that personally, it really excites me. But I have to say that the intersection of technology and humans, right? I think that life is always like a pendulum, right? And we go from one extreme to the other, right? So we went probably from being very human centered into very technology centered. And I think that we are kind of like getting into this area where there's a lot of interactions and things are changing, right? So of course, with COVID, some of these interactions have been accelerated, right? Like people have been buying more than ever online, you know, without actually trying the product, whatever the product is. But then we're also seeing how some things that have been completely online are starting to try to find their place offline. Right. And it was even before COVID, right? The Amazon and the Whole Foods example, for instance. Right. So, or even now, I was just listening that Square is developing this like physical hardware, like, you know, for like a wallet for Bitcoin, right? So I'm really excited about like that interaction, you know, between the online and the offline. And I think that for us is super, super relevant, right? Because we were born as a D2C online only company, but I'm sure that we're going to be evolving, right? And try to find our place also in the offline world of our customers.
Right. Absolutely. No, those are definitely very interesting dynamics, especially when it comes to, you know, the hardware and the software, how those interact between each other. So that's very interesting. You've mentioned a little bit around technology, which, you know, is a space that I'm personally very excited about. And that's my background. So when it comes to innovation, especially your company, I'm pretty sure that you have to continuously innovate, make your products better, make your processes better. Tell us a little about the strategies that really help you build and foster that culture of innovation.
Yeah, no, that's a really, really good point, right? And I think that one of the things that all the founders had from the very beginning is that we don't want to be like the typical furniture company, right? Like that's exactly what we're changing, right? And part of that is the approach that we take to innovation. And we really are almost like if we were like software. Right, like probably right now we are in the elephant, you know, like 32.5, you know, of all the versions that we've created, because we are very receptive to feedback, right? So we put the product out there, we listen to our customers a lot, we interact, then we revert, we make changes, and we go and do it again. So it's very like a very similar approach to software, right? Where you're always updating and always really looking for those improvements. But I would say that culturally speaking, you know, one of the things that I find very funny is that we always say that we want the innovation and so on, right? But when someone comes up with an idea and, you know, and the idea is not as good or whatever, we just like kill it, right? And sometimes we kill it and we don't reward that, you know, that bad idea or that failure. And innovation carries failure, right? You're gonna, in order to innovate, you're gonna have to test and you're gonna have to try different things. Some things are gonna work, some things are not gonna work. But I think that is really interesting how we react to failure, right? How do we, reward the people that are actually taking those risks, or we say that we are, but then we don't, right? So it's something that we've been working hard, you know, in terms of like being at least aware of how do we react when, you know, when some of the things that we are testing don't work, right? And maybe we did some investments and so on, and it didn't work. And instead of making it like a, you know, like a big deal negatively, it's like, let's make it a big deal positively, right? What did we learn from it, and then move forward, right? And I think that just how do we interact, or how do we co-live with failure, and how we react to it? It's key for innovation.
Right, absolutely. And it's, you know, oftentimes innovation is misperceived as something grandiose and you know, earth shattering, while it could be actually a small improvement to an internal process. So it definitely resonates and makes sense, everything you're talking about. As far as, so you're as an executive and a co-founder of your company, I'm more than positive that in terms of surrounding yourself with top performers, and, you know, is at the top of your mind 24/7, whether you're actively recruiting or not. Tell us a little bit more about this process. What are the strategies that really help you attract the top talent to your teams? Or maybe on the other side, what have you learned through this journey when it comes to talent acquisition and attracting the best out there?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that talent is kind of like the key for everything, right? Technology is amazing, you know, but I think that the human factor and is what really, really drives it forward or makes it better, right? And I think that there's no company that can grow or really scale without talent. And we've seen that, of course, throughout my career. In my experience, you know, there's like of course, two things to assess, right? And one is kind of like the skill set, the basic skills, you know, and the technical side of things. And then the other one, that is the one that normally I pay more attention on. Normally our teams work on the skills and technical side of things, which they are much better than me at, right? And then I assess more on how good of a mutual fit we are, right? Because I truly believe that you can have someone that has the best skills ever, right? But if the environment, the culture, the incentives, if all the rest is not aligned, that person is not going to thrive, regardless of being an amazing person having a great potential, right? And I think that the opposite is true, right? You can have like a very solid foundation, and given the kind of like the where you are, the environment, the incentives, the people, the culture, et cetera, you can really thrive, right? So I pay personally a lot of attention into that kind of like more like attitudes versus aptitudes, kind of like a part of the equation, right? I know that my team will always do like a good work on the technical side. So, you know, I like to get to know the person, you know, because I think that at the end of the day, we are human beings working with human beings. And the more that we understand how we communicate, how we process information, how do we face the problem solving, you know, how do we react into, you know, like not ideal situations. You know, I think that for me is kind of like what allows me to know, you know, would this person be good for this certain position, right? Because for example, there might be also, you know, like positions that we might be looking for someone that is completely different to us, the founders, right? Because we need to have like, we cannot be a soccer team with only strikers. Right? We need our goalies and some others. So it's like really how to understand, and this person might have a very different perspective than what I do or how I see things. So how can I make sure that person is going to bring that into the table? And from my perspective, a lot of that has to do to really understanding, you know, their fears, their what excites them, what are their motivations, what's their background, what do they you know, when they were kids, what they like doing, you know, did they grow up like, you know, in certain environments that, you know, like really try to understand their background and who they are. For me, is super, super important.
Well, that's great. And those are definitely very interesting strategies, especially in this current market where, you know, it's such a candidate driven environment with so many opportunities out there. I think it adds another layer of complexity when it comes to attracting the best out there. So that's very interesting. Thank you for sharing that. And to take that a little bit further, when it comes to interviewing, it's such a complex space. I've yet to see anybody be really, really good at interviewing. Some people think they're good at interviewing, but oftentimes it's such a, you know, so much emphasis is on the past experience. And it's such a flawed, you know, approach towards the interviewing where you're not focusing on the strengths that are missing on your team, which is exactly what you talked about. Give us a glimpse into an interview with Daniela. What do you look for in responses when you interview your candidates?
You know, it's super interesting because I agree with you, right? And then it's so hard to even like to decide in a few interviews, few hours or whatever it is, even if it's with tests, you can do whatever you want. It's so difficult to kind of like encapsulate someone's life, right, into that time frame and someone's potential, right, into that time frame. So I think that, as I was saying, for me, it's really interesting to kind of like try to get, you know, deeper into the layers of the person. You know, what makes them tick? When do you feel like you're in your, you know, like you have that adrenaline that you feel awesome, right? Is it, you know, to understand what type of personality, you know, because again, you know, we all can learn some things, right? Like some technical things we can learn. But for example, at a startup, right? And we've been having some interviews recently, and there are some people that are amazing, but they are looking for like, you know, a lot of stability, you know, having a, you know, like a, almost like in a more corporate world, you know, where you have like everything set up, you have like a very clear path, you know, it's like, that's not going to work. You know, if you're really tick, when you have that stability and that, you know, that clarity and that certainty, if you're not good at dealing with uncertainty and even get a little bit excited about that uncertainty, we probably are not going to be the best fit. You are awesome and we are awesome, right? But we're probably not going to be able to create as much together because our deep values are not going to be aligned, right? So I really do like go to like a lot of like questions again about like fears, about excitement, about, you know, what has been like something that you've done that you wish you hadn't, or like, you know, kind of like these very personal things. Of course, always being super respectful about the and keeping boundaries, right? But trying to get more into that. And I offer the same, you know, I think that an interview, again, is a mutual fit process, right? And they need to get to know the people that they're going to be working with and what are our beliefs, what are our values, how are we as a person as well, right? So I treat this much more as conversations than an actual interview. And I try to do that like that, you know, if we're having a coffee or, you know, like a beer, whatever it is, to really get a little bit into that layer. And I find that when we both feel that it's a good fit, then all the details kind of like will work, you know, like all the rest will come.
Right. Absolutely. Those are definitely interesting perspectives, because when it comes to interviewing, it's, you know, it's also an opportunity to create that two-way street conversation where you give the candidate an opportunity to ask you questions and make their own assessments. If you are the right leader that they will succeed under, or you are the right environment that they will thrive in. So I think those are very interesting perspectives, what you're talking about. In terms of the entrepreneurial journey, and more specifically in your space, you know, the hardware or the you know, the furniture manufacturing, so to say, I don't know how to categorize that, I guess. For anyone looking to get into this type of business or build a similar type of startup, what advice would you give? What recommendations do you have? Maybe something you wish you knew when you were first starting out. Talk to us a little bit from that perspective.
Oh man, you know, it's like there's so much, right? Especially, I mean, we started, we're not, none of the founders are expert on digital marketing. You know, we knew about, like, we have some background in furniture, but we'd never had like a furniture company before. You know, we really came from the consumer perspective, right? Like we've seen the problem, we tested different solutions, etc. But we came from the consumer point of view. So we really didn't have and still don't have much experience, right? We're learning, right? And the way that we learn, you know, and relearn is pretty much being surrounded by amazing people, right? Like our investors, our mentors, the agencies that we're working for, like the people that we talk to, like you, right? Like all the people that we surround every conversation. I think that, you know, probably what I would do is like try to get as much input as possible, you know, in the different areas of the business. But then again, you know, I always say that, you know, at some point we were like, we need to launch, right? We need to launch, and there's no time to, you know, to look for the exact perfect, you know, like a provider of X, right? Like at some point you just have to move and make it happen, and then you will kind of like revisit, right? So I would say kind of like a combination between, I would ask a lot of questions. I would try to talk to people that are, you know, like have gone through a similar process, and ask, even if it's super simple, like ask those questions. Like, you know, like I think that it's totally fine not to know things, and it's totally fine to ask for it. And people are willing to share their experiences. So I would definitely do that. But I would also, you know, like keep in mind that no action is, or it's worse than any action, right? So,
absolutely, I love these recommendations, and definitely, you know, you're going through this journey, and it's as a startup founder, it's you know, you pivot at probably by the minute, not by, you know, by the week. So it's just having that, you know, that I think mentality, in the sense that even when problems arrive, it's more of an opportunity to learn versus, oh my God, you know, what are we going to do now? We're so toast. So
yeah,
it's, kind of, it's that mental framework where you choose your own experience, in a sense. I think that resonates with exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, like on the other hand, it's also like, don't be afraid, you know, what's the worst that could happen, right? Because again, we decided to launch this without being, we're like far from being experts, you know, we didn't have experience, right? And it was all we're a D2C company, you know, so we started like with that. But as you're saying, choose your own adventure. And the way that we kind of like face that is like being so much coming from the side of the consumer, if this might be our advantage, we can turn this weakness of not being experts, you know, into an advantage, like because we didn't have, you know, like we were like fresh in that sense, right? So we probably saw it with a little bit of a different perspective than if we had been working on it for or in the sector for a long time. So yeah, choose your own adventure. I like that, like the books.
Right. Absolutely, I love that. Speaking of reading, when it comes to your content diet, what are the different sources that you utilize on a daily basis to keep yourself educated, informed, or entertained?
Yeah, no, you know, it's I think that for me, you know, it's podcasts, because I realized, you know, later in life, of course, that I'm much better processing information when I'm listening to something than actually reading it. You know, I actually pay more attention. So podcast has been like a life changer in terms of how I actually get content, because before it didn't matter how hard I tried to, you know, read more. It was just very tough. You know, it took me like forever. So now with podcasts is much better. So I have a few of them, you know, like for news, for example, I go for Snacks Daily. That is from one ex-Endeavor staff and colleague. So I do that for kind of like the, you know, the business side. Up First, to know what's going on in the world. And then, of course, in terms of entrepreneurship, Ivy Podcast, I do listen to you, have amazing content there. I love How I Built This. I love the stories. You know, I really get inspired by others, you know, and learn from others. So that is what I was telling you before, of what the things that I would do, right? How do you get more information of what others have done? So How I Built This, Master of Scale. I like E-commerce Conversations. So, and in terms of leadership, I really like Brené Brown. That is all about like Dare to Lead and coming from a very human perspective. So, you know, I don't do that every day, of course, right? But those are kind of like my go-to. If you go to my Spotify, those are my go-to podcasts.
I love those recommendations. And I now know for a fact that Ivy Podcast has two listeners, which is which is you and my mom. So I appreciate the plug, and the definitely resonates when it comes to, you know, the content diets. There's just so much information overload and availability that, you know, always fascinates me how people are being selective in terms of what they let their minds be exposed to. So thank you for sharing that. As far as when it comes to books, what are you currently reading, and what is one book that you always recommend to others, and why is that?
Yeah, you know, like my go-to book, and again, you're gonna see that it's very like human-driven. That's kind of, I really truly believe in human nature and us as humans being the ones that can make technology amazing and other things amazing, but it's a human first approach. And it's called The Four Agreements. And it's a very, very simple, you know, it's like a very short book that I can read without like getting distracted that much, you know, that I can finish fairly quickly. But, you know, it is about kind of like four things that if you do, they're going to drive you into a better life. And I think that it can be applied into business and your personal life equally. You know, one of them is like be impeccable with your word, because, you know, once you say it, it's out there and you cannot take it back. So really think how you're going to be saying things and what you're saying. The other one that I love is don't take anything personally. I think this is so important, you know, because all of us, we think that we're so important, that everyone is trying to do things to bother us, to help us, to like, we're too important, right? In our own mind. And at the end of the day, it's like, that is not true. You know, it's, you know, they didn't do this to affect me personally. And I think that when you actually do that, it, like the dynamics with the, how you face different situations in your life change. And again, in business, it can be all the time, right? Like in terms of like a coworker and so on, you know, like we tend to make things personal when they are not. The other one is don't make assumptions. That's the third one. And assumptions, like there's been wars, right, that have started because of assumptions. And we love to think for others instead of sometimes just asking, right? And again, I think that this is something that when we apply, it can take us really, 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 really far. And the other one that I love too is always do your best. That's the fourth agreement. And one thing that they say, and really kind of like got stuck in my mind, is like, if you always do your best, you'll never feel guilty, right? You did your best. And I hate that feeling of guilt. And so that's like a good exit. But then also knowing that our best is going to be different in different stages of our life, right? Our best is going to be one if we are healthy, for example, or our best is going to be different, you know, if we are under some, you know, some if we're sick or there is some illness or something. But as long as we do our best, you know, like I think that it's going to be good. So I really apply these four agreements, or try to remind myself, you know, to apply them and consistently and constantly in the things that I do. And I have to say that as of today, I'm not reading. I'm just focusing on my podcast. So as I told you, like, it's very hard for me to, you know, so I do some audiobooks and so on, but with all the, you know, the content in the podcast, it's so relevant and it evolves so quickly, right? And it's so relevant to the moment that I've been sticking more to the podcasts.
Right. Absolutely. No, I agree with you, because, you know, it's such an easy medium to consume. You know, during my walks or during my workouts, it's all, you know, the different podcasts. And I recently discovered I'm late to the party through Apple Watch. You can actually listen to directly from this, so I don't have to have my phone with me. So I was just like, oh my
God. Yeah, they make it easier, right? It's just like so easy. There's no excuse.
Absolutely, exactly. And I love the book recommendations. I'm going to add them to my growing list of books that I have to read this year. And for our listeners, we'll make those available in the show notes, so you guys can check those out as well. Daniel, I can't thank you enough for your time today. It was very short and, you know, insightful conversation. I love the energy. You're just so positive. So I definitely appreciate all of that. As with all of my guests, what I love doing is another episode recording in about a year where we revisit the conversation from a year ago and see everything we've discussed, if that still makes sense, applies. So I'm definitely looking forward to doing that with you.
I love that, Jenny. It's been super, super fun. Thank you for giving us the, you know, the space and just to share some, you know, some experiences. It's amazing. And again, I've been learning from all the content, amazing content that you have created as well. So thank you. Thank you for making us part of it.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.